Right, 806 FM Talk 106.5, and it's Mobile Mornings on this Wednesday. And we'll hear from you on the text line and the phone line, 343-0106. It's also the day we check in with our friend Jeff Poor from the Jeff Poor Show on WVNN in Huntsville. Of course, read his work in Lanyap, Breitbart, Yellowhammer News, and he joins us now. Thanks for your time, man.
Hey, man, thanks for having me on.
I want to, before we get, there's so much to talk about out of Washington and this kind of the Washington connection here to Alabama. I saw you discussing this yesterday on Twitter, a story from Sean Ross over at Yellowhammer that Dick and Liz Cheney to headline a Bradley Byrne Senate fundraiser. So this is a big deal.
I think it's a big deal. I think there's a little fear, though, for when you just talk to some of Bradley Byrne supporters that it comes off as a little establishment Washington, a little too establishment, and I just find it odd that guys, Bradley Byrne supporters, are a little defensive about it. You know, Dick Cheney and Liz Cheney are what they are, but let's just keep in mind, let's keep it within the confines of the state of Alabama. Forget whatever's on Fox News or whatever you saw Tucker Carlson last night. Just keep it in Alabama, and I think Dick Cheney remains to be a semi-popular figure. I don't think he's Donald Trump or anything, but there's sort of a stylistic approach he took when he was vice president that I think appeals to Alabamians. And the same says for George W. Bush. So I don't know that it's necessarily a negative thing. Now, my next question would be, though, who's going to fork over minimum $1,000 to go see Dick Cheney and Liz Cheney at the club in Birmingham? And I think it goes up to $5,800 to the VIP reception. So, yeah, I mean, I know they have these fundraisers all the time, and this is as good a reason to go to one as any, but I wonder who this draws.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a lot of money. I will say this. I just was there earlier this month for one of my nephew's wedding for the reception. It's a heck of a view from there of Birmingham. I don't know if it's a $5,800 view, but that's some nice digs up there on top of the mountain.
It's a little dated, though. You know,
like I thought it was swanky, man. I dug it. But
I have been going to the club since I was a kid for just different things, and it seems just... It's always there, and it never changes, and it just feels like I'm back in the late 80s, early 90s or something whenever I head up there.
You mentioned that with Dick and Liz Cheney coming down, feels kind of maybe like an establishment, like endorsement for Byrne. Do you think that any of the other candidates, Tuberville, Roy Moore, do you think any of them will kind of pounce on that and say, look, he's bringing the swamp into his campaign?
I think perhaps Tuberville will, but Tuberville's already got a bunch of other things he could go after Congressman Byrne for, so we'll see. I mean, they haven't really taken many shots at one another, except for some of the, only one in particular, but I won't mention his name, and they're not really mixing it up, so at this point in time, I don't see that happening. It may be later if it's close and things get desperate. But it's hard for me to see that this really becomes a we're going to see like the voiceover with the guy that sounds like he's the railroad villain talking about Dick Cheney and Bradley Byrne.
That guy is going to get a lot of work here in the next year. That and playing minor chords on a piano. You had the minor chord music in the background, and that guy's voice. Let's talk a little more about the Senate race. Here in Alabama, of course, you mentioned Byrne and Tuberville, the top of the heap. But where's Secretary of State John Merrill? I mean, he had some decent fundraising numbers when we had talked last week or the week before. How's he doing campaigning, or is he getting traction?
He's still kind of right there. Now, look, he was, when he first started in the single digits, and now he's up to double digits, and all he's really been doing is traveling the state and going to pancake breakfasts and Republican meetings and Rotary Club meetings. But it's still, I think, everybody's playing for second place right now. It's hard for now. There's one big variable still out there, obviously, with the lot of talk about Jeff Sessions getting in the race still. But if things stay the way they are, there's no Sessions, then he's where he probably should be. If he's playing to get into a runoff, and I don't know that anybody's going to have enough firepower to catch Tuberville in time for the runoff, probably where you want to do your most work is in that if you could get into the runoff and in that 4-week stretch between the primary and the runoff.
I know that he would scowl at me and say, Sean, of course not. I can't do a John Merrill voice, but it seems like this Senate run for John Merrill is a real good setup for the gubernatorial cycle in Alabama.
I think so. Yeah. And it gives him an excuse to, not that he needed, ever needed an excuse to run around the state and do appearances, but I think he may have looked at it as the worst case scenario, that worst case scenario, I don't get any traction, I do terrible. Well, at least I'm out there raising money and going to see people around Alabama. Maybe I get to run a few ads. Maybe there's a debate. I'm not sure many people watch a debate in the state for something like that, but maybe there is, and it raises his name ID from something other than being just Secretary of State of Alabama, which I would say probably a lot of people, your average person, not really sure what the Secretary of State of Alabama does. It's a very important office. It's not to say it isn't, but I, you know, you wonder about what, how relevant it is in the minds of your average person.
Well, he is, in recent memory, maybe you can correct me, but John Merrill, out of, and I agree, Secretary of State is not front and center most people's minds, but I bet you there's a better recall of the current Secretary of State now in Alabama than maybe there's ever been in name brand. It still doesn't put him where others are, but I mean, for that job, he has pretty good name recall.
Yeah, I would say he's probably more people could, or maybe as many people could name the Secretary of State of Alabama now as they could the Lieutenant Governor or the Attorney General. I mean,
yep.
You know.
Which is, I mean, those are jobs that are part of the system, but they're not, they don't get the news time. You don't write about them. Well, you do, but people that aren't like you don't write about them all the time.
Right, and the people that are paying attention, it's the quote-unquote insider Montgomery crowd, and maybe you pay a little attention during an election cycle, but he has used the office in a way to raise his awareness of him, but he's not, I mean, he's no Tommy Tuberville or Kay Ivey or whoever. He's still got a long way to go.
He's no Pierre Delecto. If you also mentioned Lieutenant Governor, and I know that Lieutenant Governor Will Wainsworth was on your show. It's been many times, but he was on last week, I think. Could those be two names we see in a gubernatorial cycle, Merrill and Ainsworth?
Maybe. It's going to be, man, it's going to be tough for anybody to beat Ainsworth. He could probably buy most of Montgomery and all the land surrounding the Capitol and the governor's mansion because he could sell finance. He is, and he's got a lot of things going for him. I find him to be, when you look at the two, he's not out there as much, obviously. But he seems to me to have some. There seems to be more of a, I don't know, is it good vibes or something about Ainsworth when he talked to the Montgomery types. Merrill, I don't know how seriously he is taken by these folks. That's the problem. But no one took Roy Moore seriously, and no one's taken, you know, a lot of people in Alabama like seriously, but that in Montgomery. So I don't know if that's necessarily the best barometer. But those two head-to-head, it's an interesting matchup and interesting display of strengths, especially geographically. Ainsworth probably captures a lot of North Alabama. Where does Merrill? Merrill's roots are in East Alabama, but he is a West Alabama guy, so figure that one out. It's just, like you say, the friends and neighbors sort of campaign.
There's been talk for a while that Governor Ivey's going to call it a career once her term is up. Any change in that? Have you heard anything that she might be considering a re-election campaign?
No, and you could kind of tell. I would say the first big tell for you guys is the toll bridge and the way they pursued that. Anybody running for re-election would know that's not the way to do that. That's number one, but I also think you could just watch her check off things off the list. Gas tax, not very popular. Prison reform, probably not unpopular, but probably not popular. And doing the things that she's doing, she's getting accomplished. She's not running a re-election campaign 4 years out. She's running, I'm going to get stuff done, leave my mark, and leave a legacy behind.
All right, we'll talk more about that. And yeah, I know over the next few months, we keep saying it, but this prison reform is going to be the big thing. I mean, this is probably going to be the gas tax of this coming session, right? Don't you feel it'll kind of hold that same place?
It'll do it stylistically. I'm not sure too many people are really worried about the state building new prisons and doing stuff for prisoners. I don't think it's something you're going to run on that's popular, but I think it's the feeling there is the DOJ has kind of forced the hand, and
sure.
that they'll have to figure out. The trick with that is getting everybody to agree on something.
All right, coming right back, more with Jeff Poor. From the text line to new accident, thank you, Sarah, said a three-car accident in the left lane of the Bayway about a mile and a half before the tunnel going towards Mobile. So westbound I-10, the Bayway, three-car accident in the left lane about a mile and a half before the Wallace Tunnel heading westbound. More coming up with Kane in the traffic department next. Y'all stay close. Thank you, Kane. 822 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. By the way, too, you heard the mention there, the Marshall Tucker Band. We've got tickets for you to get the gold seating for Marshall Tucker at the Greater Gulf State Fair. That show's coming up on Sunday. Your chance. I say tickets are actually armbands.
Yeah,
things.
Yeah, the armbands to get you in.
Right, so you get in the fair. I think you have to pay whatever the nominal fee is. You get in the fair, and then these wristbands get you front and center with your own bathroom. It's the VIP section for Marshall Tucker. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame members, Marshall Tucker Band, coming to the Greater Gulf State Fair.
The Can't You See VIP. That's what I would call it. If I were in marketing.
Why didn't they not talk to you first? Continue our conversation with our friend Jeff Poor. Of course, you read him in Lanyap and Breitbart, Yellowhammer News, and host, oddly enough, of the Jeff Poor Show on WVNN. All right, Jeff, let's talk about the more than three ring circus. I don't know how many rings, but the circus going on in Washington now. And I'm reading a story now. This, like Dalton said this morning when he pointed this story out to me, it's from BuzzFeed. But it says the Trump impeachment inquiry coming soon to a television near you. So what? Now it's going to leave the House Intelligence Committee, and now it's going to be primetime watching, or what?
I think so. If you notice this morning, and you may not, but just across cable news, everyone's talking about this Taylor guy that's testified before the committee and how great it was. And there's a lot of people just really out there and on the Democrat side talking about how it's very, very serious, and it shows just how awful Donald Trump is, right? Well, and my feeling is it's not going to sell as well secondhand. And at some point, Democrats are going to be like, well, we got all these great witnesses to make for must-see TV. We got to figure out a way to get them on the screen, because if you really want to land some blows with the American public, this, like, going on Fox and Friends or going on The Last Word with Lawrence O'Donnell and saying, I got the goods. I mean, that's fine for your political junkie, but it's not really moving the needle much. So I do think at some point Democrats are going to be like, well, you know, we had to do this behind closed doors to please our donors just to do it without giving the Republicans an advantage. But at some point they're going to have to look at it and be like, we need to make this more of a public spectacle.
Yeah, and you think about that. So what the motivation would be is, I mean, I've been saying this since word go, President Trump will be impeached. The process of impeachment will come out of the House. Even the president now, I guess, saying this sees it as a sure thing. So I'm guessing if you have those proceedings going on in the House and you change, like you said, I think importantly, just regular Americans, not even wonky or inside or people that live, eat, and breathe politics, but regular Americans, you can somehow, whichever way, sway opinion. Then those senators look at those constituents, right? And they're going to hear one way or another. And I mean, I'm sure the Democrats are hoping to influence some kind of Republican mutiny, or at least having a few more of them peeled off.
And I don't know, really. It's hard for me to understand really what... I know that the Democrats want to do it. It's hard for me to know what their motivation in the long run or what their end goal is, right? So what are they trying to pull off? Do they want to do it because they need to placate their crazy base? Are they trying to appease some donors and raise some money? You know, you think about the Democrat side, Sean. There's a lot of places to spend money if you want to give money to Democrats. You got the House candidates, you got Senate candidates, and you got the presidential candidates.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on the Republican side? Well, you could give money to Donald Trump right now, but you don't really need to because he's not really running for much. You can give all the money to the RNC or the congressional candidates or whatever. So the need to raise money and the need to have some kind of prop or something to raise money to show that it's time, I think that's the whole, and I think that's a big part of the impeachment. And so they had to go for it from that standpoint. Now they recognize, look, we know when it gets to the Senate, it's done. I mean, there's not going to be, you know, anything to see there. Other than you might get to see the Supreme Court Chief Justice come in, and they'll move. They'll have a few motions, and then they'll vote to withdraw it or whatever. Mm-hmm. But they had to go through this, and I think the Democrats have this thing here, impeachment inquiry, whatever you want to call it, and they're still trying to figure out, what are we going to do with it? How are we going to use it to its max potential? We have to use it. Traditionally, probably would not have wanted to use it. That's why Pelosi has drug her feet on this. But we have this thing. We got to do the most we can with it, given it's sort of landed in our laps. And that's what we're kind of waiting to see.
I believe Mitch McConnell, who hasn't said a lot over the last month or so, he put out a pretty strongly worded statement condemning the president removing troops from the Syrian border right there with Turkey. But as far as the impeachment thing goes, are the Republican senators, do you think a lot of them are just kind of following McConnell's footsteps? And what would it take for McConnell to flip against the president in this case?
I think that's a crazy thing to do, even for McConnell to even tinker with. If he does, he puts a bunch of his incumbent members in jeopardy of losing their Republican primary, if it is beyond a primary in a particular state, and he puts them in jeopardy of losing the general election. I don't know that that's quite the option. Even if it would take something so bad and so reckless and so damning to get McConnell to have the justification to steer his troops in that direction, that the American people would have to pretty much be on board. We're not talking. The American public supports impeachment by 50%. It's got to be like 90%, because right now I think that 50% are mostly Democrat voters. That other 50% are all Republican voters, and those 50% of Republican voters are really going to upset if you flip. So you better have a good reason to flip, because even then you still got to get 2/3. You think you even are in range of 2/3 of removing the President of the United States? I think that bar is so incredibly high, it's hard for me to see anything on paper right now that could get to there, even if there is something really, 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 really bad. I mean, we'd have to meet the, it'd have to be like Andrew Johnson, Richard Nixon, Bill Clinton bad, right? And I don't think that they're quite there yet with this.
We have just a minute left here, but, you know, in any other time, you would hear that another book was coming out with a tell-all on President Trump, and people say, oh, that's going to be a bad deal. I've gotten to the point where I guess I build up calluses. I'm like, yeah, that'll just be another thing.
Yes, I agree completely. I think the public is the same way. We're desensitized to it. I remember when the first Michael Wolff book came out, sold like bananas. Mm-hmm. Same with the Bob Woodward book. And then the Wolff came out with a second book, did not do that great. Everybody's got their tell-alls. Cliff Sims, I mean, he sold a few books. But anyway, the books aren't really, we've been there, done that. I think people are desensitized.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, I guess we'll find out later next month. Jeff, as always, we appreciate our conversations. People want to find you online. How do they do it?
It's twitter.com/Jeff_Poor.
There he is, folks. Jeff Poor. We're coming right back. It was just a sad news yesterday. Like I said on Twitter earlier, to have an Amber Alert canceled and for me to have my heart broken at the same time. That was the news of the finding of the body of Camille McKinney in Birmingham yesterday. We'll have more details and some audio from that presser coming up next.
Thank you, Kane. 836 FM Talk, 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. Right now it's time to head out to McConnell Automotive. Talk to Louis Arata. Hey, Louis.
Good morning, everybody.
Let's talk about, and with Mitch on so often, we talk about all the great new car sales. But what you guys have there at McConnell that is just as cool are the used cars. Got some amazing used cars on the lot. Tell me about those.
Oh, yeah. We've had a great couple of new car months, which is great for the consumer because we've got a lot of nice trades. We've got one tons. We've got three-quarter tons, you know, right around this hunting season. Everybody needs to pull the tractors up there. We got, I mean, we must have five or six three-quarter tons, got a couple of one tons. GMCs and Fords, the GMCs and Chevrolets that we have are certified, which gives you an extra 12 on the warranty, which is always good. Also, we got the 0%. I don't want to harp on this, but 0% for 72 months on new Yukons.
Man.
I mean, that's what brings the people out. And like I said, we've got one of the biggest used car inventories we've ever had, and we need to move some stuff. It's getting to be the end of the month, so y'all come on and see us or check us out online at McConnellAutomotive.com.
All right, and one last thing, Louis. You guys also buy cars, too, and all the customer needs is that VIN number, right?
That's right. All you got to do is call Gene or I, give us the VIN number, the mile, and we'll take it from there.
All right.
Easy. Just y'all want to get y'all got old clunker sitting in the yard you got to get rid of, just give us a call.
It's that easy. We appreciate it, Louis.
Thank you.
That's Louis Arata. Go see him and the crew at McConnell Automotive. You'll find him on Dolphin Street just east of I-65.
All right, and it was last night when the news came out, and sad news around the state. As of 9:29 last night, the Amber Alert for Camille Cupcake McKinney was canceled, and so were the hopes of all of us who were praying for the safe return of that little girl. Let's go to audio from the press conference last night in Birmingham. Birmingham Police Chief Patrick Smith speaking about yesterday's discovery.
We found this evening remains of a child that we believe to be Camille. Her remains were found inside of a dumpster, and they were recovered inside of a landfill here in Birmingham.
I mean, it's just so many levels. I don't think I need to say it. I mean, just the disappearance, and then to put a human body just in trash. Mm. You know, it's given me a lot of pause here, and it's hard to even talk about.
And all human life, or actually in this case, most human life is so precious. But when you think about a 3-year-old, a little girl taken from the yard at a birthday party, and then just, you know, killed and disposed of, it's so awful to think about. And the people that allegedly did this, Patrick Stallworth, Derek Arisha, 39-year-old Patrick Stallworth, 29-year-old Derek Isha, they're both charged now with capital murder and kidnapping. And initially when they arrested them right after this case started to kind of take off, they were both charged with past crimes. Mm-hmm. He was charged with child pornography that was found on his cell phone. They didn't have pictures of Cupcake on there, but he was actually able to bond out after being charged with that. They rearrested him last night. They kept Derek Brown in jail because she had past charges of kidnapping her own children, but she remained in jail, and they rearrested Patrick Stallworth last night. Now they're going to charge him with capital murder and kidnapping.
It sounds like, too, in the presser, the mind of the police chief was on probably the same place. A lot of people thinking about their own families in the wake of this tragedy.
They are.
I hope this message is not lost to young mothers, to grandmothers, and to the entire Birmingham community. It only takes a split second. We can no longer assume that everyone is a part of the village that's trying to raise the child.
That's an understatement. Also, Birmingham Mayor Randall Woodfin had some comments.
A 3-year-old has been snuffed out from her family. And as I think about my own nieces, as many of you all think about your own daughters, your own granddaughters, a year from now, she's supposed to be prepping for pre-K. This is tough. This is a tough moment for our city.
All right. So from that presser last night, and obviously, there's going to be much more investigation. I kept in the 6 o'clock hour, you and I talked about it, and I remember the presser with Chief Smith where he had referred, this is early on after they made the investigation. I want to go through a timeline here with you, but they had talked about other suspects, and I'm real interested in where that goes today, if there'll be some other people arrested in association with this. Do they know something? Run through a timeline here. This came up on, I think Lita Gore had it at AL.com, and it went back to Saturday, October 12th. That's when 3-year-old Camille McKinney was abducted at a birthday party in Birmingham. Abduction happened about 8:30 p.m. at the Tom Brown Village Public Housing Community. Camille was with her mother, April Thomas, and other family members at a birthday party. All right, then moved to the next day, and they said children attending the party said a man got out of an SUV and put Camille in the vehicle. We've seen that video. Now, Birmingham Police Department established a command post a couple blocks away from the abduction site about 3.5 hours after the abduction. The Alabama Law Enforcement Agency issued that Amber Alert. Then the next day, Sunday, October 13th, Birmingham police went door-to-door at the Tom Brown Village complex, handing out flyers with Camille's picture, and released store surveillance photos from a nearby Shell station depicting the person of interest in the suspect vehicle, which was a Toyota Sequoia. Camille's parents spoke separately to reporters, pleading for a safe return, and an updated Amber Alert with a suspect description was issued. About 8 o'clock that night, so this is 24 hours later, residents at a Centerpoint another part of Birmingham, Centerpoint condominium complex, called 911 after finding the Toyota Sequoia parked outside. A resident and his girlfriend were taken into custody as persons of interest. The male who is detained was the man captured on store surveillance video. Of course, we now know we're talking about the man who was arrested and, like Dalton said, bonded out as well. The vehicle was discovered when condominium resident Ricardo McGee got off work and noticed the SUV parked outside the building. He conferred with a neighbor about whether he also thought it looked like the suspect vehicle released by police. Both agreed it was. That's when they called 911. And I want to point that out because that's the Amber Alert and the blanketing. That's the information working. Right. Right. They if this man had seen something during the day, he gets home to his house, his apartment complex, and goes, wait, that looks like the vehicle they're talking about. And they went from that. So that was a key here. But that's a 24-hour period, mm-hmm. right, from the abduction. Then on Monday, Birmingham Police Chief Patrick Smith and Mayor Randall Woodfin again asked for the public to come forward with credible information. Then they, by Tuesday, now we're at the 48-hour mark. Governor Kay Ivey announced plans with the Jefferson County District Attorney's Office and offered a $5,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of those responsible for Camille's disappearance. Then a private citizen added another $1,000 to that. Birmingham police also announced that two people were detained on Sunday. They had now been charged. That was Patrick Stallworth, 39, charged with 7 crimes, like Dalton talked about, and his girlfriend, Derek Arisha Brown, 29, held as well. Then on Wednesday, October 16th, Police Chief Smith specifically addressed those that may be holding the 3-year-old girl. Now, this is what I'm getting to. Remember this presser from that Wednesday. They already had detained the two, Stallworth and Brown. Mm-hmm. And then they had a presser and said they were reaching out to those that are still holding the 3-year-old girl. So I wonder what they found out in that conversation, because they still were... Either that was imagined or...
Well, at that point, they were either, I imagine, led on by these two suspects that Cupcake McKinney was still alive, or they had reason to believe, other than that she was still alive and being held by someone else.
And that may be it. That may be...
And we haven't had an update on that particular part of this case yet.
Then, like you mentioned, Thursday, October 17th, Stallworth was released from the Jefferson County Jail with that $500,000 bond. Then on Friday, attorneys for both Stallworth and Brown said their clients were not involved in the abduction of Camille. Quote here, he's just taken aback that he's considered a suspect in the disappearance of this lovely child, said Stallworth's attorney, Emery Anthony. Anthony said Stallworth has an alibi for the time frame in which police say Camille was abducted. The attorney said a client does not know any of Camille's family members. It goes on more there. By Sunday, October 20th, Birmingham Police and Birmingham Fire and Rescue, along with other undisclosed agencies and volunteers, began a grid search at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. The research conducted in the east area of Birmingham, which extended about 2 miles. They did not produce any evidence to help the investigation. Then Tuesday, October 22nd, so yesterday, police continuing to chase hundreds of tips. The family then was called to police headquarters about 7 p.m. yesterday. At that time, Stallworth was taken back into custody, like you said. Investigators told them they had recovered a body they believed to be Camille McKinney in a Santec dumpster, which I guess is a company up there that does these dumpsters. They believed to be in a Santec dumpster that had been parked near the Centerpoint apartment complex where Stallworth was originally arrested. The dumpster had been transported to a landfill near Warrior, where Birmingham police and FBI agents recovered Camille's body. And this has been one of the confusions, was the body found? I mean, both of them, it's just a horrible thing to even have to talk about. But, you know, they said, was it in the dumpster or the landfill? Maybe at that point they were getting ready to dump the dumpster at the landfill or something, but they said the FBI and Birmingham police identified the body there at the landfill in Warrior, even though the dumpster came from an area near the apartment complex where Stallworth and Brown were first arrested.
Yeah, and they've been reporting that these law enforcement agencies and rescue crews had been sifting there at that landfill through, I guess, 12 tons of trash were out there. So they were looking through that, and I can't even imagine, first off, the heartache that this family has been through, especially with the false report that that she had been found alive last week, and for it to turn up like this, but also all of the emergency crews and law enforcement that have been out and working tirelessly to help find this young girl, and just imagine sifting through trash. And
It's beyond explanation. Of course, what a lot of people will be talking about, and you heard the police chief talk about it as well in that presser last night, is taking from this, trying to keep your children safe. You know, one of the things, and somebody had emailed as well this morning about what could be done, you know, and could you GPS chip children to help, you know, with this situation? You know, like the chip, and people talking about like the chips you put in dogs, right? But those have to be scanned.
Mm-hmm.
Those aren't actively pinging. Now, right now, I think the technology, at least what I've seen, and maybe somebody knows something else, the technology for a real GPS tracker. So if you're doing something subcutaneous and you want to, but those things are big. I mean, it'd be like a surgery for the child. But I did see there's stuff like, and I know there's going to be ways, as soon as you say this, somebody will say there's a way around it. Sure. But I did see things like the soles, like insoles for the children's shoes.
Oh.
Like a pair of tennis shoes, right? Mm-hmm. The insole you pull out there. They had GPS pingers available that would fit, like soles that had been remade, and you put them in the kid's shoes and had those pingers in it, as you know, then at least they're in the shoes of the child.
Yeah, that kind of option seems like it might be the best, for especially for a small child. I know they also have, of course, if your child has cell phones, you can track.
And that's good when you're trying to find out if little Johnny is actually going over to Billy's house or if he's goofing, you know, what he's doing. And
right.
That stuff's important. But if you're dealing with, you know, younger children and predators, and even if they had a phone, the predator would get rid of the phone.
Right,
so
yeah.
What could you do? And I'm sure there'll be more discussion of this going forward. Unfortunately, it has to come with such a tragic situation as rolled out here with little Camille Cupcake McKinney. All right, to 850 FM Talk 106.5. We'll come right back. We'll get more calls from you and text at 343-0106. Right, 855 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. By the way, coming up on the midday show today, your chance at some, and I keep saying tickets, the armbands for the Marshall Tucker show. That Marshall Tucker Band is going to be Sunday at the Greater Gulf State Fair, and there's armbands that get you into their gold area.
Mm-hmm.
You said the VIP.
Yes, the Can't You See VIP.
Don't you like that? That's good stuff.
And you can see from right in front of the stage.
You really can see VIP for the Marshall Tucker Band. And we'll be giving away those armbands during the midday show. And we got to figure out, too, you and I are wanting to go. We'll look at the schedule for rodeo. Because you and I are going to go for what event?
It's Friday and Saturday night.
Okay.
And it's a rodeo. So they're going to have all the events each night.
Okay, so it'd be full.
it's not just a bull riding event. They're going to have everything from the barrel racing and I think even breakaway roping to bull riding at the end of the night. It's Friday and Saturday night. Hopefully that weather on Friday night allows the show to go on.
Yeah, it sounds like Friday night's going to be
dicey.
According to Dr. Bill, and maybe you'll hear from schools or whatever, that's going to affect high school football. I don't know yet, but he said Friday, I mean, he didn't even kind of waver that there would be, because sometimes he's like, oh, it just depends on where you are. You know, you may get showers or not, but he seemed pretty concrete this morning on getting the rain on Friday, but he said Saturday better.
Saturday might be the better night, and all kinds of fun stuff coming up at the fair. I know they've got like this. The first year they're doing this baby crawl race, and it was supposed
racing babies.
It was supposed to be this last Friday. I think they moved it back to this Friday, and I was hoping that my daughter, my 8-month-old, would be ready to roll.
She's pretty fast.
She crawled everywhere but backward. Everywhere but forwards until yesterday. Crawled forwards for the first time, a true crawl. I felt kind of bad because I was doing like the dog move where you put treats out in front of the dog. I was putting like the things, the toys that she wanted a good, and she's got such a wingspan that she was able to grab it really quickly. So I had to put it a good 5-10 feet out in front of her. But yeah, she started crawling yesterday. Pretty cool.
Good stuff. You know where that ends up? it all ends up with them running over you at some point or running into you. And there's a certain age where the children are. Dads will nod their heads along with me. And they'll run into you, give you the best hug, except they... It's a targeting.
Yes.
Kind of put it that way. There would be a flag for targeting. Yeah. Their heads at that level. And they you know, they're so full of love. They're giving you that hug. And they target. And you got to sit there and, ooh.
I love you so much.
I love you, too. Dad's getting a little nauseous now. We're going to have to. All right, good. That's good hug. Good hug, kids. Good hug. Dad's walking back here to cry. All right, we'll pick it up again at noon today for Midday Mobile. Mike Gallagher Show on the way next. Remember, online, fmtalk1065.com. You can see all the details for our Go Play Outside contest. Also, those are on Facebook, on Twitter, and our Instagram page.
That's right.